Live from Memphis, Tennessee, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey there, I am Gary Parrish, filling in for Jim Rome here on CBS Sports Radio. If you don't know me, I'm a columnist and a television analyst for CBS Sports, also a radio host, evidence being that I'm sitting in this chair right now, and what an honor to be in this chair right now. I mean that sincerely, and I appreciate you guys hanging out with me. Got a fun 3 hours planned for you. Obviously, I'm going to keep you up to date on the PGA Championship, most notably Tiger Woods, who did not get off to a great start this morning. He was 3 over after 2 holes. That sounds more like me than him. He's 2 over through 9 holes right now. A little deflating, frankly. All I ever want from the greatest golfer to ever live is to make the majors interesting on the weekends. Like, just give me something to root for on Sunday afternoon. And though it's still possible in theory, it would have been difficult for Tiger Woods to get off to a worse start than he did this morning. Again, 2 over through 9 holes at this moment. Anyway, longtime Major League Baseball writer Joe Sheehan's going to join me a little later on this hour to talk baseball, including whether Jacob deGrom should win the NL Cy Young Award with a losing record, because he probably should win the NL Cy Young Award with a losing record. Also want to ask him about an interesting story I read earlier this week about Albert Pujols and how the way defense is played now in baseball has completely ruined him as a hitter, and he just refuses to adjust to it. Joe Sheehan's going to be here a little later on this hour. 1 o'clock Eastern, I'll get you updated on the Ohio State situation involving Urban Meyer. There were some more documents, I don't know if you saw them, that were made public yesterday. They strongly suggest former Ohio State assistant Zach Smith is a creepo maniac and all-around bad dude, just a violent stalker and abuser. His ex-wife has accused him of all sorts of wild behavior, including setting up a camera in her home to watch her, threatening her boyfriend subsequent to the end of their marriage, standing in the backyard of their home, trying to peek into the windows, watching the children. Just weird, weird, ugly stuff. I'll walk you through it at 1 o'clock Eastern. And then ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski is going to be here around 1:40 Eastern to talk NBA with me and about some of the nonsensical changes the NCAA announced yesterday, including one where they announced that USA Basketball is going to play a role in identifying which prospects will be allowed to have agents someday. And so this was the big announcement. And then Woj, of course, reports last night, USA Basketball had no idea that this was even a thing. They were never consulted. They don't want to be involved in this process. And the NCAA just lumped them in there. Like if I announced to the world, you're going grocery shopping with me on Saturday, and you're like, I don't want to go grocery shopping with you. And we never talked about going grocery shopping. What are you doing? That's essentially what the NCAA did to USA Basketball yesterday. Just another embarrassing moment for an organization that tends to embarrass itself a lot. Woj going to be here to discuss it all with me right around 1:40 Eastern. And then CBS Sports' Will Brinson's going to hop on at 2 Eastern. We'll talk NFL with him. And that's where I want to start today, with the NFL, because as you heard in the update, big exhibition schedule for tonight. Saints Jaguars going to be on TV. Browns Giants are on TV. Cowboys 49ers on TV. There are 12 games in total that are going to be played. We'll get to see Heisman Trophy winner, number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield, at least for a little while. Saquon Barkley expected to play. Andrew Luck expected to return from injury. Deshaun Watson expected to return from injury. And all of that is interesting, I suppose. But these games are still largely going to be played by players we don't know and by players we don't need to know. And yet millions and millions and millions of us are going to get in front of a television tonight and watch. And evidence of that is last Thursday's exhibition between the Bears and Ravens. It was the Hall of Fame game. The Ravens won it 17-16. But unless you, like, really love Baltimore or really love Chicago or had money on it, you probably don't remember much about it at all. And yet the exhibition game, it averaged 6.77 million viewers nationally. That's more people than the number of people who watched the deciding game of the 2018 Stanley Cup Finals tuned in to watch an exhibition football game. A real hockey game with real stakes decided a championship. It can't touch exhibition football in this country. That Bears-Ravens exhibition, it was the second most watched thing of anything on TV last week. And only two different things all summer have drawn as many viewers to a television set as last week's NFL exhibition game between the Ravens and Bears. One was America's Got Talent. Just about every episode, that thing's rocking and rolling for whatever reason. And the other was the Celebrity Family Feud edition featuring Kanye West and Kim Kardashian and Khloe and Kendall and Chris and the rest of them. In other words, America's Got Talent is bigger than exhibition football in this country, and Yeezus and Kimmy K, bigger than exhibition football in this country. But nothing else is this time of the year. And it's amazing because it is now, at least supposedly, the most divisive sport in this country. We as people, divided by the protest that some players conduct during the national anthem. Some of us totally understand it and support it. The rest of you have twisted it into something it's not and yelled about patriotism. But either way, we're divided on that topic. And we're also divided on the safety of the sport just in general. Some of us read the studies about the connections between football and CTE. And a more recent study was published yesterday in the LA Times that suggests there could be a link between football and Parkinson's and football and ALS. So we read these things and we swear off the sport for our children forever. I'm not sure if any of you or how many of you saw that report yesterday, but the NFL's concussion settlement went into effect 18 months ago. And in that time, there have already been 113 Parkinson's and 42 ALS claims worth a combined $146.5 million that have already been either paid or approved. And it's way more than anybody anticipated when the settlement was started. Again, 18 months ago. Back then, the players' lawyers, they put estimates on all this stuff. And they estimated that only about $52.6 million would be paid via ALS or Parkinson's claims in the 65-year duration of the settlement. That was just 18 months ago. Now, 18 months later, the number is already at $146.5 million. So some of us read that and we swear, never let our children put on shoulder pads. That's my camp, at least. I've got three boys, ages 15, 4, and 1. Yes, all boys with the same woman. You have to clarify that for people. They think you got one early and then second wife got two more. That's just not the way it worked out for us. The truth is, we had one child when we were too young, probably, to have a child. And then we've had two more when we were probably too old to have a child. We didn't plan this life so well. But we got three boys. Our oldest does not play football. He's old enough to. He doesn't play. And our two little dudes will not be allowed to play football. We'll play basketball. We'll play baseball. We'll swim. We'll do all sorts of things. But even if one of them comes to me someday and says, "Dad, please, 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 I want to play football so badly. I love it." My answer will just be no. We just know too much these days about the risk of the sport. So I'm not going to expose my children to those risks. And I'm not alone in that way of thinking. It's not unique to me. Millions of Americans, if they weren't before, are now in that same group. And yet, and this is my point, I have no problem admitting I still love watching football. I got no interest in watching my kids play football, but I'll spend every Saturday and Sunday in the fall watching football. I'll spend tonight also watching football, meaningless football. And that's not unique to me either. And I understand that perhaps it's a weird contradiction. I can also admit that. But it's true. I hate the long-term dangers of football. I don't like when I read about the long-term dangers of football. I don't want my kids anywhere near a football field, but I still love watching football. And I know there are millions of people who feel the same way I do and then do the same thing I do every Sunday. But today isn't even Sunday. This isn't week 4 or week 12 or wild card weekend. It's a Thursday of exhibitions, and literally nothing on TV will be watched tonight more than NFL exhibitions are watched tonight. So the question is, why? Why do we do this? Why do you do this? In 2 months, you won't remember more than a handful of things about any exhibition football game, but you'll still be glued to your television tonight. Again, largely watching players who will be cut very soon. Why? Is it because you want to see Baker Mayfield just for a minute? Saquon Barkley just for a little while? The return of Andrew Luck? The return of Deshaun Watson? Is it because odds makers put numbers on the games and anything with a number on it is worth betting on and watching? Or is it just because it's football? And if you put football on TV, put players in Packers uniforms and Cowboys uniforms, Steelers uniforms. Even if you don't know most of the players, if you put players in those uniforms, we're going to watch it. Because despite all of its issues and the fact that the sport doesn't have nearly as many personalities or storylines as the NBA, the NFL is still fun to look at and worth your television time. So here's my question, why? Why will you watch not just football, but exhibition football? Why is exhibition football bigger than playoff hockey? Why is exhibition football way bigger, and it'll be proven tonight, than regular season baseball? And are you like me at all? Someone who understands the long-term risk of the sport, wouldn't let your kids anywhere near it, given what we know today, and yet still, you plop down whenever you get a chance in front of the television to watch football. The number here is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. Give me a call. Let's talk through it. I'm Gary Parrish, filling in for Jim Rome. You're listening, CBS Sports Radio. Parrish, television analyst, columnist, radio host for CBS Sports, filling in for Jim Rome. We're coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, national mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. I'm going to be here today and tomorrow, so if you're familiar with me, thanks for following me over here. If you're not, you got six hours over the next couple days to get familiar with me, and you can tweet me at Gary Parrish CBS. That's at Gary Parrish CBS. MLB columnist Joe Sheehan is going to join me in the next segment. We're going to talk baseball with him, but right now I'm talking to you. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. And the question that I posed at the end of the opening segment was simple. Why are you going to watch exhibition football tonight? Because a whole bunch of you, a whole bunch of us, are going to watch exhibition football tonight. I told you that last Thursday night, the Hall of Fame game, an exhibition game, played largely between players that will be cut, players you don't know, players that you don't need to know. It drew 6.77 million viewers. That was the average number of viewers for that game, 6.77 million. The second most watched thing on television, period, last week. The only thing bigger was America's Got Talent, because for whatever reason, I'm going to look into this at some point, people apparently love America's Got Talent. So that's the biggest, but exhibition football was the second biggest. That number from last week, 6.77 million, bigger than the deciding game of the 2018 Stanley Cup Finals. And the third biggest thing that's been on television all summer. Again, a bunch of America Got Talent episodes and the Celebrity Family Feud featuring Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. They both outdrew last week's exhibition football game. But nothing else all summer has outdrawn that. And so the question is simple. Why do you watch not just football, but exhibition football? Again, these games don't count. You won't remember anything about them. They're not going to determine who's going to the playoffs. They won't determine largely who's going to be a starting quarterback, who's going to be a starting running back, who's going to do anything. But you put players in Packers uniforms and Cowboys uniforms and Steelers uniforms and, yeah, even Browns and Bengals uniforms, and people watch it. And it is an amazing thing, because this is supposed to be what we read all the time, we're told all the time, the most divisive sport in this country right now for a couple different reasons. The anthem protest, obviously started by Colin Kaepernick. There are a large number of people in this country, and I would fall into this category, who understand it, who support it, who think it's nonsensical for the NFL to try to put rules in place to avoid it, if only because putting the rules in place just create more headlines and pour fuel on the debate that has been going on now for years. If not for the NFL and also the President of the United States consistently reacting to something that really surrounds just a small number of people for a very short period of time, I'm not saying the story would be dead by now, but it wouldn't be a constant topic of conversation on television, on radio, on message boards, and wherever else people communicate. It just wouldn't be. So there's those of us who support it and understand it. Then there's a whole other group of people that just don't. And they have their reasons. And if you're in that group, you know what your reasons are. So the sport's divisive in that way. And then also because of the risk of football. We know more today than we've ever known. And what we know today is scary. I told you, I won't ever, ever let my kids play football. But I will watch football, I assume forever, including tonight. Mostly meaningless exhibition games. Why do you do it? 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. We'll start with Mark in Ohio. Mark, it's Gary Parrish filling in for Jim Rome. How you doing?
Hello.
Hey, I appreciate you being here. What's up?
Hey, I got a six-year-old son, and he wanted to play Pee Wee football. And as much as I worry about him getting hurt, I couldn't stop him because, you know, there are some people who play the game right and some people who play the game wrong. And it's kind of like karate, you know, in the Karate Kid, the movie.
Sure.
It was the one sensei who taught how to do karate the wrong way. He taught violence and hurting the other individual. But then there was the Karate Kid sensei. He taught him values and how to compete in the correct way. And all my concerns about my son, I'm there at games, at practices, as much as I can be, and I try to be a voice, and I try to be there for him because I don't want him to just be on his own. And that's what I would say to parents, is to just be there with them. And, you know, sometimes I don't think they do teach the game the correct way, and I have to speak up despite it not being accepted. And that's about all I have to say. I would watch football tonight if I could, but I have to work.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for calling. I guess here's what I would say to that. It is true some people teach, I guess, anything the right way and the wrong way. What we have found out in recent years is that even the right way of football still appears to be very, very dangerous. And I want to make it clear, I don't want to come across as judgy. Like, I understand why other parents might want their children to play football. I just personally won't do it. But, like, I'm flawed as much as anybody else, if not more so. For instance, I won't let my kids play football. But my kids do watch Game of Thrones. I bet you some people think that's bananas. And, like, I understand why. So I'm not trying to pretend I know what's best for everybody's children. I just have read so much and learned so much about the sport of football that my children who have never played before will not start playing. I think it's a real, real struggle for the parents whose kids grew up playing football in a time where we didn't know everything we know today and fell in love with the sport, got good at the sport, and now we have all this information. And you really got to balance a couple of things. God, my son loves playing this sport. But, geez, it is undeniably a risk to do so. And if we would have known this 15 years ago, he'd have never started playing 15 years ago. But we didn't, so we did, and now we're in this situation. I have friends like that. I understand that. And that would be tough. To read the study that was in the LA Times yesterday suggesting strongly that there's now a tie not only between football and CTE, but football and Parkinson's and football and ALS, it would be very difficult to read that and say, hey, son, you're very good at football. You love football. You love your teammates. You love everything about it, but you're not playing anymore because I just read this story in the LA Times. I don't envy parents who are in that position. It just so happens to be that I'm not in that position. Evidence of that would be this. My oldest son, who's 15, when he was like six, did play football. We didn't know as much 9 years ago as we know now. Now, he just grew away from the sport, had no interest in it, didn't like it, thank God. But, like, if you fast forward and he was a sophomore in high school and awesome at it and he still wanted to play, I don't know if I could take that away from him. But given that he doesn't want to play, I'm appreciative. My little dudes who have never been on a football field, they'll never get on a football field. And yet, me and my little dude, my middle one, we'll probably both be in front of a television tonight watching other people play football. The number here is 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. Let's go to Scott in North Carolina. Scott, it's Gary Parrish filling in for Jim Rome. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. I couldn't be better. You all right? Let's go.
I'm good. You know what? my son, 14 years old, played Pop Warner for 3 years. Probably the most positive sports experience of his life. And I even was his coach for soccer when he was little. But the coaches, the team in general, had great respect for these kids. They watched them. They are very cognizant of concussions and these kids getting hurt. He doesn't want to play anymore when he goes to middle school. I get that. But I got to say, it was one of his most positive sports experiences as a kid. Didn't mind going to practice, liked it, liked the coaches and everything about it. And I think he learned a lot about some life lessons from those coaches as well. So I didn't have a problem with it. He never got hurt. He was okay with it, okay at it, but, you know, he doesn't want to play it anymore, and I get that. He's going on to other things. Like you say, we know so much now about the dangers and things about it. I get it, you know. But I think the smaller kids, if they got good coaches and they are paying attention to them and they know they're, you know, they may not get hurt as bad. But like you say, as you get older, the hits get harder and it's a tougher game. And all these people that are playing professionally now, they chose to play years ago and they're still playing and they're making a very good living at it. But it is at a huge price, knowing what could be happening later if they do get concussions and they do get hurt.
There's no question about it. I appreciate you calling, man. Thanks so much. Let's go to Ronald down in Florida. Ronald, Scary Parish, filling for Jim Rome. How you doing?
Hey, man. How you doing, man? I've been checking you out, man. I agree with everything that you're saying. I'm not going to really get into any of the politics, but I'll say this. My son plays football. I'm glad he stopped playing. I was going to pull him from it anyway. I think as parents, and again, this is me, I think as parents, we instinctively protect our kids. Like you said, we know too much about it now, man. But again, this is just me. But I also watch. I also watch boxing. These guys, these are our modern-day gladiators. They get paid millions of dollars to, yes, sir, go in that arena and kill each other. You know, but America loves violence. That's all they got, dude. I'm checking you out, Gary.
I appreciate you, brother. I mean, that to me, that's the most interesting aspect of this. That even people who feel the way I feel and the way Ronald feels about the dangers of football, like, still watch football. I was going to say I struggle with it. I don't actually struggle with it. It's not like I feel guilty watching football. But it is a weird deal. I wouldn't let my children anywhere close to a football field, given what we know now. But I won't be too far away from a television if football is on, even though there is all this stuff about what's happening to the people competing that we know now. We might get back into this a little later on, but we're going to turn our attention to Major League Baseball in the next segment. Joe Sheehan's going to join me. We'll talk baseball with him, including, should Jacob DeGrom, who was terrific again yesterday, win the NL Cy Young Award for the New York Mets, despite having a losing record? Because that's what he has right now. Joe Sheehan's going to join me in the next segment. But right now, here's Andrew Bogish with a sports update.
Live from Memphis, Tennessee, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
Yep, I'm Gary Parrish, television analyst, columnist, radio host, CBS Sports, filling in for Jim Rome. You can reach me on Twitter at Gary Parrish CBS. I'm going to be here today and tomorrow, so you got me for another, I don't know, 5 hours, 20 minutes or something like that over the next couple of days. I'm going to catch you up on the ongoing situation at Ohio State involving Urban Meyer, Zach Smith, and Courtney Smith in the next segment. And if you're curious, and I know you are, Tiger Woods now 1 over through 13 holes. So he started 3 over through 2, has been playing well since then. Your leaders at this moment, Ricky Fowler, 3 under through 15. Stewart Cink, 3 under through 10. Again, Tiger Woods, 1 over through 13. We'll keep you updated on the PGA Championship throughout the show. But right now, Joe Sheehan's a longtime Major League Baseball columnist. He is the author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter. If you're not subscribed, you should be. He's on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan, and he joins me now. Joe, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing, man?
Good, Parrish. Long time no speak, man. What's going on?
Everything's good. I appreciate you being here. Jacob DeGrom, let's just start there, was awesome again yesterday. Six innings pitched, 10 Ks, zero earned runs. He improved, and this is where it gets weird, to 6-7 on the year despite having an ERA under 2. Is it going to be possible for him to win the Cy Young even if he does have a losing record?
You know, one of the interesting things, Parrish, is that from year to year, a different subset of voters gets the ballot for each of the awards. So to some extent, this is it's hard to know if the NL Cy Young voters are a particularly old school group. It'll give an edge to Scherzer and Nola. There's also the fact that Scherzer and DeGrom, even take the records out of it, just look at it from a stat hit standpoint, they're actually still pretty close. So there's enough time left in the season for Scherzer to deserve it, irrespective of the win-loss records. I got to say, we saw Felix Hernandez win at 13-12 a few years back. We've seen relievers win. I think that you've got stat heads on one side, you've got traditionalists on the other side, you've got a big middle group. I got to wonder if it would be hard for your average stat knowledgeable but maybe not stat head voter to push the button or whatever it is next to the guy who's, say, 7-9 versus the guy who's 18-5. I think that's going to be a really interesting conversation.
And Jacob has obviously, and I know this story well because I'm a Mets fan. For whatever reason, I don't know. It doesn't even make sense anymore, but I'm still here. And so I've watched every start, basically. And he's handled this situation, I think, fairly well. Or at least he's always said the right things. But I can't imagine how frustrating it is. I mean, there's some never-been-done-before stuff that has happened to him. To go out and throw as well as you're throwing, have no run support whatsoever, and maybe actually cost you a big bullet point on your Wikipedia page. He has to be way more frustrated than he's shown, right?
I don't know. I think players today, Jacob DeGrom's 29, 30 years old. So he's kind of come up. You know, a lot of players, they've come up during kind of the stat head era. And also the media doesn't get on you as much. I think, you know, 25 years ago, the conversation would have been, what's wrong with Jacob DeGrom? Why can't he win games? We're all a lot more sophisticated than that, though. I think Jacob DeGrom knows that his job is to go out, hold the opponent, you know, go deep into games, hold the opponent to as few runs as possible. And he's what's not in his control is, do the Mets score, which they don't do most nights, whether DeGrom's on the mound or not.
Right.
And the, you know, the defense behind him, the bullpen, there's only so much you can do. I feel like because we're all, you know, media fans, a little more savvy about this stuff today, I think the players can be more savvy about it. Jacob DeGrom's not getting questions. How come you don't have what it takes to win? We know better.
Talking to Joe Sheehan here on the Jim Rohn Show, CBS Sports Radio. Meantime, Jason Wirth, and this is sort of related, thinks, quote, super nerds are killing Major League Baseball. I agree with you. We are smarter about the sport today than we've ever been, and yet Jason Wirth seems to push back on that a little bit, or at least think the intelligence brought to the sport is somehow ruining the sport. Does he have a point, or is this just the type of thing a dumb person might say?
We came out with the first baseball prospectus book in 1996. If you make any list of super nerds about baseball, I've got to be honest with that.
Right.
In 1996, baseball's revenues were approximately $1 billion. They're going to be $10 or $11 billion this year. If we're killing baseball, we're not doing a very good job of it.
On that note, I saw I don't guess it's a stat as much as it's just a fact, that obviously nationally the NBA is bigger than Major League Baseball. It's got more personalities. It's just a more followed sport on a national level. As someone who does a radio show every day in a non-baseball market, I can just tell you, we could talk about the NBA whenever we want. Major League Baseball, you better have a special kind of unique story before you dive in. And yet, and this is my point, in baseball markets where there's a baseball team and an NBA team, the baseball team outdraws, in terms of television viewers, the NBA team more often than not. Do you have an explanation for that? Why does baseball resonate bigger in markets where there is an NBA team as well than the NBA, but nationally it doesn't appear to even be close?
The local thing's easy. Baseball doesn't have a lot of competition locally in most markets from, say, May through August, and then football kicks in. So baseball's got the stage to itself. That's why you'll see a lot of these numbers about local television. Baseball does. But because it's up against, you know, three World Series of poker reruns and, you know, the first round of a European golf tournament.
Right.
In the fall, the NBA's got to compete with the NHL. It's got to compete with, you know, the NFL for a lot of that year, college basketball. A lot of markets, you know, there's a lot. I'm assuming Memphis is like this, Gary. You know, both the college team is almost like the local pro team. So the Grizzlies are competing with the Tigers, particularly when the Tigers are good. So I think there are a lot of reasons why baseball does well locally. Nationally, you know, it's just it's easier to market basketball players. You see their faces. If I go to a Lakers game, to use the example this year, I know LeBron's going to have the ball in his hands 40% of the time. And the other 60% of the time, he's going to be glaring at some young player who doesn't know what he's doing. In baseball, you can go to a game and see Mike Trout. Mike Trout might walk twice, you know, strike out once, hit a single to the left, catch two balls in center field, and you didn't really get to see Mike Trout do the things that he's paid for. So it's harder to sell individual players. There's one other thing that people aren't talking about, though, and this is what frustrated me about Rob Manfred's quotes at the All-Star game. Baseball spent 40, 50 years telling people baseball players are greedy, baseball players are ruining the game, baseball players are disloyal, baseball players are cheaters, and now they want to market the game. If baseball hadn't spent 40 years telling fans that baseball players are all these terrible things, maybe it'd be easier to sell the game now.
That's a good point. I'm talking to Joe Sheehan here on the Jim Rome Show, CBS Sports Radio. I am Gary Parrish filling in for Jim Rome. You can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. I read a story earlier this week about Albert Pujols and how perhaps more so than any other hitter, the defensive shifts that have basically become a thing right in as his career has progressed have affected him more than, again, any other player. And he doesn't seem willing to adjust, you know, change his swing, change his approach. But the point he made, and I believe there's some data to back this up, is that there's a, I don't know about a whole bunch, but certainly a not insignificant number of balls that he hits that 15 years ago would be singles, and now they are line outs to a shortstop playing in shallow left field. Is there anything baseball will do or should do about the way defensive shifts have quite clearly changed the game?
Well, the second thing is easy. No. It's evolution. I mean, you wouldn't tell a football team, okay, these guys are going to run the ball to the right, but you're only allowed to put two linebackers over there.
Right.
You wouldn't tell a basketball team, hey, their two shooters are over here on the right-hand side, you know, but hey, keep four of your defenders on the other side because it looks nicer. This conversation is being driven by, you know, I'm 47, and I got to say this, old people who don't like the way it looks, but it's just the evolution of the game. If you want to beat the shift, lay down a bunt, go the other way, hit differently. And I'm not saying that's all easy. There's the brand of fans that will say, oh, that's easy, just go the other way. Pitchers are witches now, Gary. They throw 98 with ungodly breaking stuff. And it's not just as easy to say, well, just go to left field off of that. So, yeah, is it hurting a number of hitters? It absolutely is. You know, your left-handed hitters who are trying to hit dead poles, or your right-handed hitters like Pujols. Pujols' other problem is that he's incredibly slow. Shortstops are playing him basically in the rover position in short left field. And it's a little bit embarrassing. But, no, I don't think the game should do anything about it. I do think they will. I think it's going to placate the people who are making the loudest complaints. Baseball is very good at making a change that will win the press conference, but not actually have an effect on the game. The biggest thing affecting the game right now is strikeouts, and by extension, the pitchers being witches and able to do ridiculous things. The rubber has been 60 feet and 6 inches away from home plate for 125 years now. In that time, the average pitcher has gone from being like 5'1" or whatever they were in 1893. Just 6'3", 225, and the average major league fastball is now 93 miles an hour. Shifts aren't affecting the game nearly as much as the fact that 60 feet 6 inches is too easy for pitchers now.
I'm talking to Joe Sheehan here. He's on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. Earlier this week, Rick Ankiel announced that he's going to at least try to return to the major leagues. He's 39 years old right now. As a relief pitcher, he pitched in some event over the weekend, said he felt good, said he needs 3 or 4 months to get into pitching shape, but he believes that he can come back and do it because the game has changed in the sense that it's now, you know, high fastballs and big breaking balls, and that is what he could do, or at least, and this is the fascinating part of the story, at least it's stuff he could do before he couldn't do it anymore. Famously had to quit pitching, became an outfielder. He hasn't been on a major league mound in 14 years. How likely is this? I don't begrudge him for trying it. I mean, it's your life. Do whatever you want to do. No real harm in trying, but is it even possible to come back at 39 after being away from the sport that long? I can't imagine it's ever been done.
I just want to know if Dennis Quaid is going to play him in the rookie two.
Right.
Quaid's got to be, what, his 70s now?
He's up there.
Honestly, having not seen him pitch, Gary, I'm not going to say one way or another. I will say this. Relief pitchers, we think about baseball players having a broad set of skills, but relief pitchers now are asked to do very little. If you think about like a typical left-handed reliever, he has to have like 1.5 pitches.
Right.
He might throw 15 to 20 pitches 3 to 4 days a week. So Rick Ankiel, if he has the velocity, that's going to be the entire thing. Does Rick Ankiel, can he dial it up at least to 92, 93 to make him a viable left-handed reliever? And I think he'll probably still be able to spin a breaking ball. That's just one. That's something you either have or you don't. But to me, it's going to be the velocity. Can he still get it up there? And I got to tell you, I don't see a reason. Even when he was an outfielder, Gary, he still had the great arm.
Right.
So I think he deserves, if team wants to give him a chance, you know, probably have an open tryout. Maybe he has the velocity that'll get him into a minor league system, and then it'll just be about performance. I'm not going to write him off. This isn't Tim Tebow, who, if you look at the performance in the low minors, had no business really being there. This is a guy who's got a track record of being a Major League Baseball player and might have the raw skills to do the job he's trying to do.
I'm wrapping up here with Joe Sheehan. He's on Twitter, @Joe_Sheehan. Last thing before I let you go, Oakland won again last night. And they are, yeah, now 4 games back of the Yankees for the first wild card spot, but they're 3 games up on Seattle for that second wild card spot. How do you explain what's happening with that franchise?
Defense is the biggest thing. They've gone from being a below-average defensive team 2 years ago to average, and now they're the best defensive team in baseball. The addition of Matt Chapman at third base has really upgraded the infield defense. Matt Olson at first base. Dustin Fowler was giving him good innings in center field before he got sent down because he wasn't hitting. But that's the biggest difference in this team. When you look at that rotation, which doesn't strike out a lot of guys, they've been very reliant on that defense to make plays, and it has this year. They also have an offense. It's a very modern offense, Gary. You know, they hit a home run. They don't do a lot else. But a guy like Chris Davis, they basically got him a couple years ago and said, don't worry about your batting average. Do what you do. Now he's on his way to another 40-homer season. So defense and home runs.
That is Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. If you haven't subscribed yet, you should. You can follow him on Twitter, @Joe_Sheehan. Thanks so much for being here. Terrific as always. I'll catch up with you down the road.
Take care, man. Good talking to you.
All right. Joe Sheehan. He's on Twitter, @Joe_Sheehan. I'm Gary Parrish, filling in for Jim Rome here on the Jim Rome Show, CBS Sports Radio. And just to circle back briefly to the Rick Ankiel situation, I am fascinated just by the idea of it. And it was kind of sweet watching him talk about it the other night. He said, listen, like, I'm weighed the pros and cons, and I know that this might be crazy for some. It might just be crazy, period. But my kids have never seen me pitch, and I'd love for them to see me pitch. And when laying out the pros and cons, there's a whole bunch of pros. You know, maybe I could take that nearly unprecedented moment in my career, which is he goes from being one of the most dynamic left-handed young pitchers in the sport to he cannot throw the ball to the catcher anymore, so much so that he has to quit pitching, so much so that to try to alleviate his anxiety, he even reduced himself at one point to drinking vodka before he took the mound just to try to calm himself down. So you get to go and maybe put a new chapter in a book. Wow, 14 years later, he comes back and actually does get on a major league mound. So that's one pro. Going and getting, you know, paid like a professional pitcher is an undeniable another one. And the cons, he said, there aren't any. If it doesn't work out, what did I lose? And if it does work out, my kids get to see me do something that would be a dream come true. And so I'll be rooting like crazy for him. You know, he was in the Cardinals organization. The AAA affiliate for the Cardinals is the Memphis Redbirds, the place where I live. I knew Rick way back then. I actually just coincidentally happened to be covering the game for the local newspaper when he got called up to the Cardinals for the first time. So I've always rooted for him, even though I'm not a Cardinals fan, and I'll be rooting for him again. Ohio State's investigation into the Urban Meyer situation continues to unfold. I'm going to get you caught up on that next. I'm Gary Parrish, filling in for Jim Rome. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio.